Hi, I'm Rob.
And I'm Rob.
And this is Ask Rob and Rob.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Ask Rob and Rob, the show where you get your questions in and we give you our best efforts at an answer. And that format's been running for a lot of episodes now. And it's a popular one, so let's continue that roadshow and remind you how you can get involved and get your very own question answered.
Yep, oh so simple. Give us a call on 013-808-0035 or go to propertyhub.net/ask. Okay, let's have a listen to our first question. This one is from Phil.
Hi, Rob and Rob. This is Phil from Reading. I want to start off by thanking you for all the amazing content you post. I recently sold my residential property owned in my name, which now means I now have £120,000 in savings. An accountant set up a company for me to buy property, and my plan had always been to use the company to purchase buy-to-lets that I wouldn't live in. With rents rising, I pay roughly $1,800 a month in Reading. I was wondering what your thoughts would be on me using this company to buy a property such as a 3-bed terrace house in Reading or a growth area like Manchester and Birmingham, renting out 2 of the rooms so the rent covers my monthly mortgage payments and I effectively live for free in the house. The idea would be I save the money I'm not paying in rent and I use that to put down a 25% deposit on another property in 12 months' time. Thank you again for all the great work you do.
Thank you for your question, Phil. And it's a good one and it's a good idea because a lot of people get their start in investing by renting out rooms. It's very, very common when you get into the backstory of property investors to hear that they started out by kind of stretching themselves, getting themselves the biggest house that they could, renting out rooms to cover their living expenses and therefore have more funds that they're able to save up for further investments. Pretty much exactly like you're talking about doing here. So that part of the plan is absolutely fine. I think the bit that you're going to struggle with is buying that property in a limited company and being able to live in it yourself, even renting out rooms, even if the majority of the rooms are rented out. As a general rule, if you've got a buy-to-let mortgage or a company buy-to-let mortgage, then the borrower or anyone connected to the borrower can't live in that property at all. So speak to a mortgage broker about that. But if that's right, then it means that if you want to go ahead with this plan, you need to buy the property as an individual yourself. So you could just get a residential mortgage, make sure again via a broker that your lender is okay with you having lodgers, which they pretty much normally would be, and that's all good. The only issue you would have is in the future, if you convert it into a pure buy-to-let, at that point, the tax treatment wouldn't be as advantageous as it would be in a company. Maybe at that point, you could then sell the property and buy a different one instead, which means you wouldn't pay any capital gains tax on it, but you would, of course, have all the associated buying and selling costs. So there's quite a lot to think about. So first thing to do, speak to a broker. You may then want to speak to your accountant and understand the tax implications of the different scenarios that might play out in the future. But that's all detail. It's all important detail and you need to sort it out. But the core idea is a good one. And however you structure it, it should allow you to save up well and therefore progress faster than you otherwise would. So hope that's useful, Phil, and good luck.
Good luck, Phil. And next up, we have Rashid.
Hi, guys. I'm Rashid. I've been listening to your podcast for a couple of years, and I have one rental property and looking to purchase a second one in 2023. My question is, I've been looking at calculated gross yields and return on investments to try and understand which properties I should be looking to purchase. But my question is, when you're working out your profit for your return on investment calculations, what do you include as expenses to get to that profit? Do you include your total mortgage payments? Do you also include your tax at the end of the year? Or do you just include your interest payments and then do you exclude tax? I'm not really sure how it works and it's not very clear from how different people approach it. And yeah, do you have any targets? I've read previously on your blog that you target about 10%. Has that changed with recent market conditions or is it still the same? Thank you.
Great question. Because so many people get themselves like wrapped up in different types of returns and yields and what should they be looking at and what should they accept and what shouldn't they accept. So let's first of all start with the simple one, gross yield. Now, gross yield can be useful. It's the most simplistic way to measure a property, but it's in its simplicity that means it's actually useful, because you can benchmark it against every property and know that you can calculate it the same way against every property. So the simple way to calculate gross yield is take all your income, so your rental income, and let's just say it's £500 a month, which would be £6,000 a year. Now, let's say your property you're looking to buy is £100,000. Well, then your gross yield would be 6%. And that's a way to create a quick benchmark against other properties. So, okay, I'm looking at 10 different properties. Let's quickly work out the gross yield on all of them. Now, that alone would not guide my investment decision, but it's just one of many things that I will look at when looking at any investment. Return on investment is super useful, but only to you. And the reason I say only to you is because everybody measures it in different ways. And that's possibly why you've got a bit confused. Some people will say, oh, you know, I want a 10% ROI. You've quoted that we've said many years ago that we look for 10%. We absolutely do not look for 10% now. And it's probably for a couple of reasons. The market's moved on. When we started the podcast, it was 10 years ago and the market was in a very different place. And also we probably changed the things that we measure. So today I'm quite happy with sort of 2 to 4%. I'm actually more focused on, will the property generate capital growth for me? Because that's where the real wealth is made. But the band I'm kind of looking for an ROI these days is 2 to 4%. Now, what's really interesting is there'll be some people listening to this going, 2 to 4, that's really low. And others going, 4, I can't get anywhere near that. And that's not because people are looking at better or worse deals. It's because of the way they measure it. So when you do an ROI, you take in all your costs and then you go, okay, what's the total amount of costs and how much will it cost me to get into the deal? So your purchase costs, so your deposit, your solicitor's costs, and so on. So then you go, okay, what's the percentage of my return versus my purchase costs? So if my return after all costs nets down to £3,000 a year, and it costs me £30,000 to go into the deal, then I've got myself a 10% ROI. Now, sounds simple enough, but where the confusion comes in is that people use different costs. So purchase costs, I will include things like stamp duty, solicitor's fees, broker's fees, and my deposit. But some people may not include their broker's fees, for example, or they may not even include their solicitor's fees. So they'll just do the deposit and stamp duty. So straight away, we have a difference of how we're measuring it. There is no right or wrong way. It's an individual preference. And with costs, it's the same. So for costs, I will put down the management fees of the property. If it's a leasehold, I'll put down service charges and ground rent if there is any. But I personally don't include maintenance because the type of properties I go for tend to be even new or nearly new. But others will put in a lot of maintenance. But then on the other side, some people may not go as far as putting their rental management in. So again, it comes down to what you choose to put into your calculation that will give you your number. What you need to do is be consistent with how you measure your ROIs, and that will then mean that you can measure property to property. Don't compare yourself to other people's ROIs. So if you're getting an ROI of 4% and someone else is getting 8%, it almost certainly won't be that they're doing twice as well. It's probably that they measure it differently to you. So that's why gross yield is super useful, because it's something that everyone can agree on and it's a benchmark for every property and it's quick to do. And ROI is a more personal number that you can use to assess your own deals, but don't use it to compare to what other people are doing. So thank you for your questions and thank you for listening. We'll be back on Thursday with the Property Podcast and of course back next week with Ask Rob and Rob. So until then, take care, have fun, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.